Your On the Mark podcast is loading now. The On the Mark podcast is sponsored by the Sunbury Motor Company, family-owned dealership since 1915, 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia on Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. News Radio 1070 WKOK presents On the Mark. It's a chance to voice your opinion on the events that affect life in the Susquehanna Valley. Call 1-800-795-9565 or email onthemark@wkok.com. Now, here are your hosts for On the Mark, Mark Lawrence and Ben Reichle.
Greetings and welcome on board the WKOK Live Telephone Talk Show On the Mark. I'm Mark Lawrence. Mr. Joe McGranahan has the day off. You just heard his name. Mr. Ben Reichle is across from me. He is a conservative local business person. He's one of the many owners of an employee-owned business around here. He's a Republican committee person. He is not a New England fan, so we'll get his Super Bowl prediction before we're done here today. But he's with us today to help on our analysis. Welcome aboard, sir.
Thanks. Good to be here. Interesting weather, too.
All right.
This week, I'm sure, as a weather bug you are, you were well into digging into why it's cold, when it's cold, and how long it's going to be cold.
Yep, we were following the polar vortex. I was hoping we'd get a little asterisk in the record book, and we missed Tuesday by 1 degree. So we were hoping maybe we'd get that. It was 6 below was the record, I think, back in 1955 or something, and we were 5 below officially at the Penn Valley Airport Seance Grove. So we didn't get the weather record for that. All right, with us also, Bob Garrett is here from the Greater Susquehanna Valley Chamber of Commerce. He's president and CEO, so welcome aboard, sir.
Great to be here this morning.
Appreciate that. And you brought Sue Green, who is the new chair of the chamber, and she is the director of corporate learning at Penn State University in the Penn State Executive Programs, and that's where they really spend a lot of time making sure that companies are able to keep up, that their leaders get fabulous cutting-edge leadership skills, and really learn a lot about how to stay on the, you know, on the upside of technology and business trends. And so we appreciate Sue. Thanks for coming in.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
I appreciate that. You need to school some of us in here on what we can know. We know the jobless numbers around here right now because we heard them on CBS. 304,000 people say, hey, I found a job last month, so that's a good news. But despite that, the jobless number itself went up to 4% from 3.9%.
Unemployment.
What did I say, jobless?
Mm. Yeah, unemployment just ticked up a tenth, but that's more people out there looking for jobs and more people getting jobs. So right now we have it's not only jobs running over the dam, it's running down the side of the dam too. There's a plethora of work out there.
Okay. Bob, reaction to these numbers?
Yeah, I'm actually looking at, Mark has a chart up of the participation rate, and what Ben is saying is right, that the participation rate is going up. This is about the fifth month in a row where it looks like it's going up. Now, we're not at pre-recession levels yet. The participation rate for January was 63.2%, so it's heading in the right direction, but not exactly where we want it quite yet.
Well, you have a couple of months of gains in that area behind you now, so.
Right. It seems like we have a little bit of a tailwind blowing us the right direction. You know, I put together this briefing before we do these First Friday On the Mark programs, and the theme, if you will, that I put together for today's was, do shutdowns matter? Well, clearly the shutdown is in the rearview mirror. Let's hope it stays there and we don't have another one coming up in a few days, but it's in the rearview mirror, and clearly the American economy is very resilient, very strong, and continues to grow.
All right, Sue, reaction to the jobless numbers, please.
You know, this is a learning curve for me. I've not actually looked at these type of numbers, and I just really appreciate Ben and Bob explaining how this all works, because when you look at it and the numbers keep going up and people get employed, but yet the unemployment rate keeps climbing too, it's kind of like it's confusing for me. But I do I appreciate the explanation.
Yeah, I need these guys. How can you create $400,000 jobs and then up the unemployment rate? How does that work?
Well, more people are in the workforce. We see the participation rate go up. The unemployment number is jump in on this too. It's, you know, there's difference. let's say, different levels of unemployment. And we see, we talk about different sectors of unemployment. You talk about teenagers, you talk about middle age, you talk about more seasoned workers, and then you get into the breakdown of various races that you hear people talk about, where Latino unemployment, Black unemployment, mm-hmm. and then you break down the segments within those groups. But when more people are entering the workforce, there's going to be a sort of a natural blip with the unemployment number. So do you have the static unemployment number? Or do you have the U6 and 13 numbers?
Yep.
So you have to look at those breakdowns. Also, too, what will be interesting in the immigration battle that's going on is when you start talking about the visas, you talk about the hopefully they can come to an agreement and get some workforce let's say laws that will allow workers to come in documented and get green cards. So, you know, we're looking at the U.S. economy. I think Larry Kudlow, one of President Trump's advisors, has said the economy is very strong. But it's interesting that when people come out and say the economy is strong, hell, there are some people who want to say, no, it might not be as strong. And then they cannot back up some of that information. But also, too, let's look at where the United States is going compared to what's going on in China, India, and South America and their economies, particularly China.
All right. We got on the news line with us now U.S. Congressman Dan Muser of the 9th District. Good morning, Congressman. Thank you so much for calling in.
My pleasure. Good morning.
I do appreciate that. Don't know if you were happen to be near a radio or not, but we heard joblessness now at 4% in the U.S., up from 3.9%. 304,000 jobs created in January. Labor participation rate up slightly as well. Your reaction to hearing that news out of Washington today?
Well, the economy is very strong. Certainly this indicator of job creation and unemployment at 3.94% is fantastic. It hasn't been this low, and we haven't had these sort of economic trends since 50 years ago, since 1969. So now, is the economy perfect for all? No, not by any means. Throughout the 9th Congressional, we've got a lot of work to do. We've got a lot of workforce development is a regular issue for employers as well as our schools that are endeavoring to the best of their ability to provide job placement and train and develop people for the jobs that are available. So, and that is one of the reasons that I was very happy to get on the education and what's now called labor, formerly Workforce Development Committee. Because during the course of the campaign and now, I've been in Congress now for the last month, it's just a regular topic of conversation. I'm going to be at various businesses today, and I know they will say we'd be able to hire more if we had the people that had the skills that the jobs that we have available require. So we got work to do. I mean, we need an economy that works for as many people as possible. But regardless of sometimes what the national media has to say, I mean, we've got a very strong economy.
Congressman Muser, this is Bob Garrett, the president and CEO of the Chamber of Commerce. Good to hear your voice this morning. 2 weeks from today, you're going to be with us at our joint legislative breakfast. And I was wondering if you could give the listeners some idea of what you might be talking about at the legislative breakfast, where these committee assignments might assist with the 9th Congressional District and those of us living in the greater Susquehanna Valley.
In the words of Will Rogers, he doesn't tell political jokes. He just watches Congress and reports what he sees. So I say that facetiously. I hope to share some information and insight of my last of my 6 weeks. It'll be at that time in Washington on the floor of Congress. I, like many of your members, have been in business for 25 plus years, so it's sort of a business person's view of the operation of our legislative branch of federal government. And it's been very interesting. Regardless of the clear issues of shutdowns and national security issues, there's been a lot more taking place. And you know, I'm observing and doing my best to figure out how to be an effective member of Congress. Just like you do in business, you figure out how to grow your company, make your product more competitive, and expand and be more successful. You know, it's been a lot about my staffing, keeping some top-notch people around me, which I think we've done very well, both in Washington and in the district. It's definitely about enhancing relationships with members. It is getting on committees, and once there, do a good job. You know, I would be quoted very often in my business career saying to people, hey, first do your job real well, and then help make this place better. But the first thing you have to do is impress people with how well you do your job, and that's definitely what I'm focused on as well. You know, and then there's the all important voting, and on the various amendments and bills that come our way, and you know, I just think we need members, and this is what I ran on. This is who I will be, and this is who I think I reflect our district well. That are conservative Republicans, at the same time business-minded and focused on results. I'm very focused on growing our economy, growing the private sector, not growing the public sector, not growing the government. I'm very focused on national security, and not to be too political, but the drain the swamp issues, the issues of budgetary, the spending problem that our country has, and a highly regulated economy that we have. We need to minimize regulations. We need to get our fiscal house in order, and we need to enable the most competitive business environment possible, so good businesses can do their thing. Without government not getting in the way, you know. I mean, government should, at the very least, be neutral. If we can actually be an enabler, that's better.
Congressman, Congressman, this is Ben Reichle. I know it's been less than a month. Shutdown affected it, but do you feel the divide in the House of Representatives as we see on TV? I mean, if you're walking down the Rayburn Building, do you have to stay to the extreme right, and your Democratic constituents, are they on the extreme left of those big halls down there, or is there some mutual admiration among the new group coming in, even though leadership's still the same? Do you see some light at the end of the tunnel, I would ask?
Yeah, that's a good question. Realities and day-to-day don't always reflect the imagery. So many of the new members, I've definitely made acquaintances / you know, we're friendly, and certainly with some of the current members as well, Republican of course, but Democrat too. That's one thing about committees. It does kind of force you to sit down at the same table and try to hash things out, work things out. But there's many Democrats who I have very reasonable conversations with that are there for a reason, that in many cases have districts that are pretty close. They might be plus two, plus three Democrat, or plus two, plus three Republican. So, you know, they've got to represent a people from both sides of the proverbial aisle, and they get that. Now, so they do. I've had many members of the Democrat caucus, for instance, say to me in Congress that they understand the need for a barrier, for a fencing, for double fencing, for a wall. I once somewhat made an accusation, I guess you could say, to a Democrat member, actually from New York City, And I said, you know, in so many words, you can't be serious about border security if you don't include a barrier, a physical barrier. And he looked at me and said, I am for a physical barrier. Don't think I'm not. I said, okay, so we're getting someplace. Now, on the same note, so all that happens. And, of course, you know where Nancy Pelosi is politically and is the leader of her caucus, that she doesn't want to give $1 for border security if it includes, you know, the so-called wall. So, you know, reaching a breakthrough with the rank and file and trying to overcome the Democrat leadership clearly political motives is a difficult thing. You know, we now have a conference where this thing is going now on the potential new shutdown. You know, a 17-member conference was set up. Some real good people on there. People I work with when I'm in Washington basically every day. Congressman Tom Graves, Chairwoman of Appropriations Kay Granger, and many others. And they're planning on coming up with a resolution here.
Certainly hope so.
Right. And if not, you know, the president does have the authority, and he's preparing for it, to declare a national emergency. And I'll tell you, every time you turn on the news, or at least Fox anyway, you see another caravan coming. We saw 254 pounds of fentanyl. Now, that was coming across the border in a truck, so it wasn't necessarily from an illegal immigrant or caravan. But we've got a real border problem. And for the most part, and this is why when I go on your radio show now and in general, I will just tell the people matter. The people, to me, are what it's all about. People need to call the members of Congress and tell them what they want done. And for the most part, the calls into my office are overwhelmingly, let's get border security, let's build a barrier, do what the Border Patrol agents and Customs Enforcement tell us needs to be done, and yes, let's minimize the dysfunction and let's keep our government open.
You know, right.
Not everybody feels that way. A lot of people like the idea of the government being closed.
All right. Dan, we have to take the next step in our program, but we'll let you make a real quick closing comment. You got a minute. Thank you. Please, go right ahead.
Well, hey, I appreciate it. I hope I wasn't talking too much. I want to take your questions, and we can do this again, and I will be at the chamber in a couple of weeks. But I really appreciate it. There is work to be done. It is an honor to serve the people of the night, regardless of this dysfunction. I believe I'm on the right side of things. Keep in touch with me. Call my office. Visit us in the Cannon Building in Washington. And even if we can't get things done in Washington, we'll get some things done. And I'm on the right committees to really help the district. I'm on Veterans Affairs, I'm on budget, but there's a lot of work to be done locally for the coal miners, for the firehouses, for our veterans. I'm on Veterans Affairs as well. We've got an opioid epidemic, of course, that we need to work on. Blood protection, revitalization of our cities. So believe me, the plate is full, and we are being focused, and we're going to get some things done.
All right. Well, thank you. Do keep in touch. We have this little confab the first Friday of every month, so maybe make that a good regular check-in point. We appreciate it. Thank you so much, Congressman Muser.
Yeah, thank you.
I appreciate that. U.S. Congressman Dan Muser, a freshman congressman from the 9th District. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we've got another expert on the line. We'll be right back.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Subaru Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Emerson, Lake, and Palmer. Holy smokes. Wow. We're back.
Be Friday.
Back in the 80s, I guess. Maybe late 70s.
Mm-hmm.
All right. We are doing our usual discussion about the latest jobless figures with guests of the Greater Susquehanna Valley Chamber of Commerce. Bob Garrett is here, and Sue Green is here from Penn State. She's the chair of the chamber. And Ben Reichle is with us, the co-host, fabulous producer Rob Center. Mm-hmm. And on the news line with us now, one of our favorite guests, Professor Matt Rosu of Susquehanna University, an economics professor, full professor, and now dean of the Sigmund Weiss School of Business, but he still has time to teach. So, but the question is, does he still have time to play poker?
Unfortunately not, but thanks for having me on today.
he's a what would you say, a novice professional poker player? Is that one way to describe it?
The term was a semi-professional back a few years ago. So it's the idea that I made money, and reported on my taxes and everything, but but it was not my main gig.
Dean, life is just a bit busier. You don't have to do full disclosure.
I'll tell you, you can report losses as well. Yeah, right.
Anybody who can play poker and stay in the black is okay with me. So good for you. All right, we are talking about the jobless numbers. Any reaction to this? 304,000 people added to the rolls. The jobless rate itself went up 2.4%, 1 percentage point. Labor participation rate's up a little bit as well, Professor.
I like the labor participation rate increasing is wonderful. There's one criticism of the economy over the past few years was that people had been dropping out. The unemployment rate kept looking strong, but the participation was dropping. I like that the labor participation rate is up. It's another strong report. The economy's been in a good spell here for quite a while.
All right. And as we're going forward, we see the government shutdown was weighing on the economy. Cold weather was weighing on the economy. How much of an impact do you think they had? Are these jobless numbers maybe not even as good as they could have been because of those kinds of things?
Good question. I mean, they had uncertainty is always bad for markets. So perhaps it could have been a bit higher. It seems like we're still in a little bit of a spell of uncertainty. I mean, it's what's going to happen in the next few weeks. But markets, I mean, firms like stability in order to be able to plan. And if things aren't stable, you know, you might hold off on that decision to hire the extra employee, for example.
Matt, this is Bob Garrett, president of the chamber. Good to hear your voice this morning.
Hey, thanks.
You know, we come on once a month onto this radio show, and quite honestly, we get a little wonkish with our data that we put together. We have lots of charts and graphs and talk about this rate and that rate. My understanding is you're going to come to the chamber in about 2 weeks, actually a little less than 2 weeks, on the 13th, and make a presentation where you're going to bring sort of economics and make it very approachable, almost almost something organic that people can understand better. Can you explain what you're going to be doing with the chamber at our members meeting on February 13th and what folks can look forward to at that meeting?
Absolutely, and I really excited and appreciate the invitation. The goal of this is to show those at the chamber how to find and where to find economics in everyday pop culture, to find them in movies, to find them in music, to find them in television. And while I think this is going to be entertaining and fun, I think it'll probably be a little bit different from most of the lectures. I actually think it's also really important. Business concepts, economic concepts, entrepreneurship concepts are so vital that it's important for us to understand where they're embedded in pop culture, as I think it's really incumbent upon all of us to help try to educate the next generation on the ideas of the value of entrepreneurship or some basic personal finance and economics understanding. So while I do think it will should be very entertaining. I also think it can be very important for folks at the chamber to hear.
Sue.
Hi, Matt. This is Sue. I'm with Penn State Executive Programs. I'm curious. I'm hearing a lot about disruption right now with businesses and trying to figure out their next path in this economic environment. Do you hear anything or have any opinions on how people can tackle that?
Well, firms do not like uncertainty. I'm not seeing evidence of the disruption yet, at least in the place where I would see it most is our firms looking to hire our students, and the hiring season has been very, very strong. So I don't see evidence of that yet. Actually, where I see more disruption, I just had a trip abroad recently, talking to folks at universities in the UK, that they really are struggling to know how to plan with the uncertainty involving Brexit going on.
All right, you stand by. I'm going to put you on hold. You can hang up or call back or just stay on hold. That's your call. Professor,
sure.
Very much appreciated. The Dean of the Sigmund Weiss School of Business at Penn State University on the line, Professor Matt Rosu. We're going to continue this conversation. We'll get some jobless reaction from you. We have a jobless number or question that one of our listeners has emailed, so we'll read that in the radio as well. You're right in the middle of On the Mark on Friday on News Radio 1070 WDK. Okay, Sunbury.
News Radio 1070 WKOK presents On the Mark. It's a chance to voice your opinion on the events that affect life in the Susquehanna Valley. Call 1-800-795-9565 or email onthemark@wkok.com. Now, here are your hosts for On the Mark, Mark Lawrence and Ben Reichle.
And welcome back to WKOK Live Telephone Talk Show, On the Mark. We also got Professor Matt Rosu on the line from Susquehanna University, and Sue Green is here from the Greater Susquehanna Valley Chamber of Commerce. She's the Director of Corporate Learning at Penn State University within their executive programs. And Bob Garrett is here, President and CEO of the Greater Susquehanna Valley Chamber of Commerce. On the Mark, sponsored by the Sunbury Motor Company. Check them out at sunburymotors.com. Our hometown pharmacy's toll-free line now open. Call us 1-800-795-9565 if you want to talk wages, unemployment, or participation rate. The toll-free line sponsored by the Shade Mountain Pharmacy in Mount Pleasant Mills, the Norrie Pharmacy, Danville Pharmacy, Lewisburg Pharmacy, the Bloomsburg Medicine Shop, and Trutz Pharmacy in Mifflinburg. You're welcome to email us at onthemark@wkok.com or text us at 70236. All right. Let's start out with a minimum wage proposal got brought up this week. Professor Rosu, what's your thought on the idea the governor's interested in raising the minimum wage?
I think it would cause a lot of pain in several different ways. So if a minimum wage, if it's increased, the extra wages have to come from somewhere, right? There has to be one of three things that occur in order for this, if a minimum wage that distorts the market to kind of for the markets to equilibrate. One of them could be that there are lower profits for firms. Profit margins for firms, though, aren't that high, and we're in pretty competitive markets, which means there's really two ways that the minimum wage gets dispersed. One is fewer hours for those who are earning minimum wage, or those who perhaps are earning more than minimum wage now, but lower than the proposal for the higher minimum wage. The other would be higher prices to consumers. The fewer hours could be either from reduced hours for those who maintain their jobs, or it could be some people simply losing their jobs to automation, to a firm might choose instead of hiring minimum wage workers. It might make sense to hire a worker for, say, $9.50 an hour, a minimum wage worker for $9.50 an hour, but if the minimum wage is raised to $12, instead they won't hire any lower-skilled workers. They might move towards trying to replace with a robot, a machine, I mean, like the kinds of things you see at McDonald's or, you know, the grocery stores, the automated order, you know, where you can kind of do things on your own.
Right, Ben.
So, number of negative consequences from a minimum wage increase, especially one this large.
Yeah, and Dean Rusher, this is Ben Reichle. I think we've seen that play out in places like Seattle, and I believe California has done a couple of those incubator situations where they've raised the minimum wage, and then they see the exodus of work, as you talked about, either through folks working or increased costs, less profits for businesses. If I could jump to a little different scenario and get your views on what I thought last year at this time was a little bit different. Bob Garrett and I were talking during the break, where last year when the Fed jumped in and said, you know, we can see a interest increase, we're going to raise rates maybe three or four times this year. That was for 18. And then we saw the president and his administration sort of come back and say, hold it, there's a lot going on overseas. You just hit on Brexit a little bit. We see what the Chinese and the Indian economies are doing and not doing. And then all of a sudden in December, the Fed sort of walked itself back. And then yesterday makes statements that were probably more Fed-like to say, hey, we're going to sort of wait and see and monitor what's going on, which you would hope they would do anyway. And we saw a real spike in the stock market based on the certainties that the uncertainty of the Fed wasn't going to happen.
Yeah, I'm of two minds on this one, actually. The longer-term concern is the Federal Reserve uses interest rates as a bit of a lever when the economy is struggling to try to boost the economy by lower interest rates. The worry that some economists have is with as low as they've been, if they're not raised now, what are we going to do in the next when the next recession inevitably hits? And I think that is a very real concern. So I do think there are the trade-offs. I can understand why the Federal Reserve was looking to possibly increase rates when we have unemployment rates as low as they are at the moment.
All right. Some of our listeners have sent notes. Do you think that the minimum wage provides a false bottom of wages and deters competition of employers for qualified employees?
Sure. Absolutely. I mean, and if one piece of evidence of this is just recently, Amazon sent out a thank you tweet to New Jersey for raising the minimum wage. Amazon is not known for their glorious worker conditions, right? I mean, they are not doing this out of the goodness of their hearts. They're doing this because they hope that minimum wage increase puts such extra burden on local stores that people might buy things from that they would that those stores might go out of business and Amazon would get more customers through their means. So, yeah, it absolutely could have a negative effect on competition.
Right. Anybody else want to react on this? Is competition deterred by raising the minimum wage, or as our listener puts it, just having a minimum wage?
Yeah, I guess the reaction I wanted to have, and again, this is Bob Garrett, president of the chamber, is that, you know, the minimum wage was the big discussion item, I guess, yesterday, because the evening before the governor, as he's building up to do his budget, the state budget on Tuesday, is rolling out some of his proposals. He wants to sort of see, does the spaghetti stick to the wall? And it got a lot of discussion about minimum wage. Today's discussion around the water coolers, around the lunch tables, will probably be that the governor is offering us all broadband, free broadband, I guess, almost, but we have to agree to a tax on Marcellus Shale. It's interesting. It brings people together, gives them it gets them to talking to each other. But I guess what I'm interested in from the dean is in your presentation that you'll be doing to the chamber, does that give us a framework for folks who have different opinions, different ideas about minimum wage, like this listener that sent in the question about does it create a false bottom? Can we go to the movies and musicals and books to find information that can help us create a debate, a robust debate about what's good for the economy, what's good for us in the long run, what's not good for us in the long run?
That's a good question. So in terms of, I mean, there are, almost every economic, finance, entrepreneurship, personal responsibility, personal finance type concept can be found in various movie clips, TV clips. In terms of encouraging a debate on those, there are perhaps some songs that might kind of encourage debates. There's one from the musical Hamilton that comes to mind immediately that I will probably play in terms of the idea of the Federal Reserve central banking. A lot of this is largely just to help illustrate what the concepts are. I mean, I think, unfortunately, there's too much, I think, economic and personal finance illiteracy in the country. So I think would love to get to the point where everybody understands and it fosters debate. I think, and there are many who this is what we do. I think the bigger goal of this might be in terms of just spotting the opportunities and the basic education, so we all kind of know the facts going forward, to have that robust debate as voters, as citizens.
All right, last question for you, Professor. What about the 800,000 government workers who were laid off and some of whom signed up for unemployment for a time? What impact does that have on the economy long term, if any?
I don't know about long term. I don't know that it'll have a long term impact. Short term impact, you had individuals without wages. The one thing that I would recommend, if I am in a government job, I'm going to do what many personal finance experts recommend, including Dave Ramsey, who's on this radio show, and attempt to have an amount of money saved in order to withstand this. I mean, Dave Ramsey recommends 6 months of personal expenses saved. You know, that's one of the things he says. You start this right away to weather the storm. But the government has shut down since the mid-90s. I don't know, has it been half a dozen times since then? It's not infrequent. I'm sure it'll shut down again. I don't know whether it will be in a few weeks, in a few months, or in a few years. But that would be for those who are affected by the shutdown. That's the piece of advice I would have.
All right. Well, thank you so much for your insights. Very much appreciated. We'll see you at the chamber meeting. I'll hopefully be in the back row.
Yeah, February 13th at the Boo Run Inn. It's a luncheon. You can register at gsvcc.org.
All right. Thank you, Professor Rosu, Dean of the Sigmund Y. School of Business. Thank you. Thanks again for checking in.
Thanks for having me on.
Appreciate that. Professor Rosu on the line. Of course, he's an occasional guest here. Plus, he recommends and suggests fabulous guests for our Sunrise show. So we really appreciate his hard work in the Valley. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll wrap up our chamber discussion. We got to get the local jobless numbers. We want more of our roundtable. And we got some big meetings coming up. So we got a lot to talk about here on WDKOK.
Oh, the weather outside's been frightful. School cancellations are delightful. I wanna go play in the snow. Let's go, let's go, let's go! Why is it that only kids are excited when it snows? Mom gets all crazy about going to the store for bread, milk, and eggs, and Dad runs to the hardware store for more salt. One of the quickest stops we make is our hometown pharmacy. We call ahead for our prescriptions, pick them up, and head on home to build the biggest snow fort on the block.
Discover the hometown pharmacy difference today at Lewisburg Pharmacy, North 2nd Street, Lewisburg. Shade Mountain Pharmacy, Route 35, Mount Pleasant Mills. Bloomsburg Medicine Shop, Market Street, Bloomsburg. Pharmacy, Duke Street, Northumberland. Trutz Pharmacy, Walnut Street, Mifflinburg. And Danville Pharmacy, Mill Street, Danville.
Can anyone tell me, what's the big deal about bread, milk, and eggs? I mean, what's everybody gonna do? Sit inside and eat French toast while watching Snowmageddon hit?
Your hometown pharmacy. Making a difference every season, every day.
We got open phones here right now, 1-800-795-9565. That's the hometown pharmacy's toll-free line, 1-800-795-9565. We're talking U.S. economy, the labor rate, labor participation rate went up, the unemployment rate went up, the number of people working went up. Professor Rosu's in the black playing poker, so everything is right with the world. How about local jobless numbers? How are we doing?
Right. Yeah, we're doing just fine, Mark. Three of our four counties continue to be in the lowest 10 counties. In the state. In particular, Montour County leads the pack. Montour County is right with the very lowest counties, like Chester County and the counties down in the southeastern part of the state. And Union and Snyder are right behind. So we're doing just fine unemployment-wise here. We continue to believe there's still people on the sidelines, that there's a mismatch of their skill set with the jobs that currently exist. We started last month, and I'd like to continue this month to point out that we have about two dozen what we call high-priority occupations in the Valley that that range everything from operating engineers and electricians to assemblers to machinists and welders. But the point is that these are all jobs that require some set of skills, not necessarily a four-year degree. Some of them are four-year degrees. Of course, in the healthcare field, RNs. That's the biggest just in this year coming up for registered nurses. There's going to be a need for about 350 new registered nurses in the valley. So a lot of high priority occupations right here locally. Over 1,550 new jobs will be created just by expansion, retention, and expansion of the current businesses that we have. So we feel very positive about that. We feel very positive about the strategic plan that we have rolled out, those four parts of the strategic plan, and I'm sure all of the speakers at the upcoming chamber events will focus their comments on that. Number one, cost of doing business. Number two, workforce and all of the issues that go along with the workforce. Number three, technology, including broadband expansion. And then the fourth one is polarization, the whole idea that we need to be working together as local folks to solve local problems and trying to bring those folks together. And we really applaud the efforts that are going on with the Better Angels Group, et cetera, to keep people talking to each other and keep us all pulling the same direction. You just heard two of our keynote speakers coming up for events in 2 weeks. On February 13th, we'll have Dr. Matt Rousseau, the Dean of the Sigmund Y School of Business, and a really interesting topic for a luncheon meeting at the Bull Run Inn. That's February 13th. And then on Friday morning, we co-sponsor, along with the Central PA Chamber, a joint legislative breakfast, and we will have Dan Muser, who at that time will have 6 weeks of service as a member of Congress under his belt. But it'll be really interesting. I think anyone who was listening to what he had to say here and how he's sort of figuring out how Congress works. And congratulations to Congressman Muser. I think he did get perfect committee assignments for this valley. It'll be very, very helpful. By the way, Congressman Muser represents all of Montour County and about five or six municipalities in eastern Northumberland County. So he's not the main congressman, if you will, for the greater Susquehanna Valley, but he certainly is very, very important. And if you happen to live in Montour County, he certainly is your, or those municipalities in eastern Northumberland County, he certainly is your main congressman.
Yeah, one of those numbers you mentioned, Bob, I think is very important. Maybe people can take a step back and look at when you're talking about retention and expansion of businesses that are here. That is really a big deal, I believe personally, because you look at reports and, you know, when you hire a person and you lose a person, what it does to an organization. But when you have the homegrown businesses or the businesses that are here that are expanding and hiring locally, that sets a very good benchmark or really sets the foundation then for some potential other businesses to come in here. It's not about going out and recruiting businesses to come in. It's growing what you have here, and I think the Chamber's done a very good job. And, of course, Sue, you've taken over the reins where the priorities are for the local businesses and to grow the local businesses and bring the accessories needed, hopefully broadband, and bring that for the local businesses
skilled
to thrive.
And skilled, right,
yeah, so that's interesting that you don't hear, hey, we're going out trying to recruit businesses in here. We're trying to grow what's here.
I would agree, and I think the other part of that is employers making the investment on the folks that they have. So often we hear they're great at what they're doing, and then we promote them up. And then they may or may not have the necessary management, supervision skills. We were talking a second ago, Ben, you know, like, where are all those soft skills? And I was looking at the high priority list, and supervisors and managers are going to be one of those key areas in a lot of spaces and a lot of availability. We pride ourselves in kind of targeting those type of training opportunities at Penn State. But we've got a lot of learning institutions here that help with those needs. So it's easier to keep folks and having them turn and mess, you know, and have to rehire and start the training process again. It costs a lot of money.
Well, and I think this is the perfect place for you to explain exactly what Penn State does, what the executive programs do, and what you're overseeing.
I'd be happy to. We have, and kind of touched on it, and just trying to figure how do you do that in a snapshot, but we work and customize and tailor on-site programs with a lot of organizations, even globally. So our folks go everywhere across the world. And primarily in leadership and strategy, especially with business challenges companies have trying to stay abreast of the current, you know, workings in their organization and how do they continue to stay sustainable. So we do that. We also cover a lot of developing middle managers. That's kind of my stick. Making sure that they understand how to do project management and how do they work with people and critical thinking and just communication in general, because that still seems to be a huge stumbling block no matter where you go.
All right, this idea, this forward thinking, this analytical, this being able to see the future and to understand what's holding you back and to see where you're. Why your square pegs won't fit, you know, kind of thing. That takes insight, and it is a brain skill, but you can teach a lot of it.
You can, you know, and the leadership and strategy courses that we do, you know, we immerse folks. They come in from all over the country for a 2 or 3 day immersion, I call it. You know, we house them at the Nittany Lion Inn. We feed them well, and they network with a lot of their peers and people from other industries, so it gives them a broader thinking that it's not just us. You know, that those issues are universal. And then they gain a lot of theory, applied learning. We do a lot of simulation, so they can actually take stuff back that can apply immediately.
When you do those post-class studies down at Whiskers?
Well, there's some of that, you know, study obviously.
All.
And how about it? But, it's great. You know, it's good dialogue. We've got some top-notch. You know, we've got one of the top 10 executive coaches in the country that teaches for us, and he's just amazing. So Alvisery is one of our, stakeholders that he's invested 40 years in the system in Penn State and does this as well for us. So we're really pleased to have him.
Well, continuing education is the name of the game, right?
Absolutely. The education doesn't end when you walk down the hall and with your cap and gown on. You got to continually be educating. You always want to be learning about the next job that you want, not the one you currently have necessarily. Hey, just to probably be a little bit of a wrap up here, this marks today the January job report, the 100th straight month of economic growth in the United States of America. This is the longest by now a factor of two. Longest economic growth we've ever had in the United States of America. So as you celebrate Groundhog Day tomorrow and Super Bowl on Sunday, also raise a glass and toast the economy.
Yeah, thank you, President Obama, for getting this started, right?
Right.
Really at the
and
bottom.
A whole lot of business people.
I think you have to go back to President Bush, because the Bush administration put the mechanics in line. The Obama administration
Saving legislation was signed by President Bush.
Yeah, and then
the bailouts.
Then you see the big push happen with the Trump administration. So pretty straight and narrow through the Obama administration. If you look at the numbers, you see some highs and lows in the Bush administration, and then you see just an uptick with the Trump administration.
All right. Anything else to add to our great discussion? We'll open mic for
just a reminder that meeting on Wednesday, February 13th, and the joint legislative breakfast are open to everybody. All you have to do is go into the chamber website, gsvcc.org, sign right up, and come on down.
And then when will the breakfast be with legislative breakfast?
That's the 15th. That's February 15th at the Country Cupboard. And that's 7:30 to begin, and then we really get into the program at 8 o'clock. The congressman will be right there. He'll be right there. You can interact directly with him. And then just a few days earlier, on Wednesday, February 13th, will be our member meeting, our member luncheon, and I should probably call it member and future member luncheon, and everyone's invited to that as well. That's at the Bull Run Inn.
So a big week for the chamber, the week of February 11th. You'll be in suit and tie at least 2 days. That week?
I'll send you a picture if I am.
Don't have to, though. Don't feel compelled to dress up on our occasion. Sue, how can we get more information about how to raise up our executives and our middle managers to really be as smart as they can be?
Just, you can go to the website. It's the same thing. You can Google real quick Penn State Executive Programs, and we pop up right at the top. Or they can reach out to me and contact the chamber.
Keep in touch. We're going to see you at the beginning of March as well. Thank you so much. Sue Green, Director of Executive Programs at Penn State University, the Director of Corporate Learning at Penn State University within their executive programs. Thank you, sir.
It's great to be here, Mark.
Thanks, you.
Thanks for checking in.
Yeah.
Ben, you stay put. We'll be right back.
What can you do to prevent your chances of having a heart attack? Awareness of heart health is the first step. Learn more with Evangelical Community Hospital as we rock red for healthy hearts.
Hello, I'm Dr. Petra Lynch, one of the heart experts at Evangelical Hospital. Did you know that symptoms of a heart attack vary between men and women? The most common heart attack symptom for women is chest pain or chest discomfort. But women are more likely than men to experience other symptoms, more subtle, like shortness of breath, nausea, back pain or jaw pain, or even plain fatigue. I'm here today to encourage women to know their bodies and not to hesitate when they think that something's wrong with their heart. At the Heart and Vascular Center of Evangelical, we are here to help you stay a step ahead of cardiovascular disease. For more information on heart-related events and screens that are available this month, visit www.evenhospital.com/rockred.
Join WKOK and Evangelical Community Hospital as we rock red for healthy hearts. For more information, go to WKOK.com.
Welcome back to the KOK Live Telephone Talk Show on the mark. 1-800-795-9565 is our telephone number. We're going to do Super Bowl predictions in about 25 minutes, so start to think who you want to win and what you'll see in the commercials.
We only have 22 minutes of the show left.
I know. The Hometown Pharmacy's toll-free line is open. It is sponsored by the Shade Mountain Pharmacy in Mount Pleasant Mills, the Norrie Pharmacy, Danville Pharmacy, Lewisburg Pharmacy, Trutz Pharmacy in Mifflinburg, and the Bloomsburg Medicine Shop. You can talk to Terry out at the Shade Mountain Pharmacy on Route 35 in Mount Pleasant Mills. Tyler at Trutz Pharmacy, that is right in downtown Mifflinburg. Steve's at the Norrie Pharmacy. Kathy's at the Danville Pharmacy. Jennifer's running the Bloomsburg Medicine Shop. And Brad's at the Lewisburg Pharmacy. We tell you their names because you'll see them, plus their colleagues, and you will learn something that I learned a long time ago. You get known on a first-name basis there. They don't have the little spitter-outer of number devices that makes you wait in line and wait for your number to be called. Some places, you get a number that determines when they're going to pre-screen you, that determines when they're going to call you. So it takes forever. I mean, why go to a big box?
And they don't actually holler out half-pound American cheese, half-pound bologna?
No, that's the deli. Okay. You're mixing this up. Yeah, different big bucks. But these are small-town, hometown pharmacies. And remember, every time you shop at a hometown pharmacy, you're helping your hometown, plus you help yourself. Fire crews had to battle frigid temperatures overnight in Montour County. They were called to a basement fire at a home on Foggy Mountain Road. 911 Center says they knew of no injuries that had occurred there. Half a dozen volunteer fire companies were called out. A family with an enabler and an addict in the house has one really sick person, and that's the enabler. That's the bottom line in a book that's out, A Thousand Tears, An Enabler's Journey.
But then they start bargaining with the addict, trying to manipulate them to do what's right, and instead, the addict learns how to manipulate them. So the only way an enabler can stop enabling is just to accept the fact that they have the right to make poor decisions and also the right to reap the consequences of those decisions.
That's a registered nurse, Angie Meadows. She and her husband, Dr. Perry Meadows, and their daughter, Sarah Meadows, wrote A Thousand Years, An Enabler's Story, all about the fact that enablers make addiction possible in homes. Governor Tom Wolf says it is time to tax the Marcellus Shale drillers. This time he's got a new shtick. He's going to create a $4.5 billion capital plan to help control floodwaters and connect rural areas to high-speed internet. Governor Wolf, a Democrat, is kicking off his second term by floating the Marcellus Shale tax for a fifth straight year. Republicans say it is dead in the water, like everything the governor's been proposing lately that's a little bit out of their league. But at least Jake Corman didn't say it's irresponsible to even discuss it. Let's see, finally, about President Trump. He said yesterday that unity will be the theme of his first State of the Union address under a divided government, and that he respects, this is proof that he's believing in unity. He did not call Stacey Abrams by his usual name. He said she's going to give the Democratic response, and he says, quote, "I hope she does a good job. I respect her," unquote. Trump said of Abrams, who will be the first black woman to deliver the rebuttal, Trump will give his speech Tuesday before the joint session of the U.S. Congress at a sensitive time and talks over keeping keeping the government open, funding the border, and talks are underway with China. Members of Congress are inviting federal workers worried about another shutdown. Special Counsel Robert Mueller's probe into the Russian meddling also hovers. Trump will be surrounded by living reminders of the changes wrought by the 2018 midterm elections. And these are individuals who were in the U.S. illegally for at some point in their life, but are being invited to Congress by various Congress members, and will be there to remind the president that not everybody who comes over the border is a rapist from Mexico.
I don't think that's a...
That's not quite the message.
View, I was going to say.
Well, he said it, but he may not feel that way.
Liberties. Well, it seems like somebody's taking liberties with content. But, you know, when we look at what's going on at the border and we see the false reports and we see what has been happening for decades down there, finally somebody's pulling the curtain back and it's showing it. And it's just ludicrous that...
Emergency, though?
Very much so, and has been. Has been for decades, and it gets swept under the rug. It's just utterly ridiculous that we have a border in the shape it's in, with some sections that are stabilized and others not, and all this information coming out from all sides. But, you know, one of the interesting ones is, you see some of the groups on the liberal media shows who make a comment that 90x% of the drugs are coming through ports of entry. Okay. But there is illegal immigration coming in at non-ports of entry, and when those drugs make it into the United States, who knows? So it's very interesting that how the numbers get switched around, and sometimes on all sides. But one of the comments is, how do you know what illegal immigration is? Because you don't catch all the people who come in. When you do catch groups that come in, they're asking for now asylum, which is the new narrative that has just really come about in the last probably 10 to 15 years. And then also bring a family with you and you can have a better chance of getting in. These are all known tactics, all used. What we're seeing now in Mexico is Mexico's dropping off their enforcement of their southern border. So the corrupt government of Mexico, run by drug cartels, not the Mexican government, is one of the major problems that we have to deal with.
So legalize pot and seal off the border would work. Let me ask you this. Why doesn't the Republican and Democratic leadership in Washington really want to reform this? They have had 10 years, as you pointed
You're
out,
right.
to work on this. Nobody touches it. Now, the president's interested in taking action, but both Republicans and Democrats in Congress say absolutely, positively, no way.
Well, go back to, I think we've talked about this over the years and even the last couple of weeks, Mark, and we talked about, do politicians really, really want to solve problems? Or do they just want to superficially mask them or put a Band-Aid
on it? The latter, yeah.
Well, because for the Republicans, let's look at the big business Republicans. Let's look at the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. They want inexpensive, quote-unquote, cheap labor, okay? What do the Democrats and liberals seem to want? They want more potential Democratic voters. In a way. Now, that's not 100%, but it's high percentages on both sides. So now you have outsiders who come into government, like a President Trump or another business person. Let's say a business woman comes in and takes over. And they look at that and says, hold it. This isn't how a country runs. You just can't have illegal immigration coming in. You have to get your legal immigration straightened out, and you have to look at the people who are coming in. It's not barriers to X country or Y country, but if we're the greatest country in the world and people want to come here, just like, let's say we're the University of the United States. What type of students do you want at your university? You want students who can get through your curriculum and go out and add value and put a name to your university. So we have immigration
systems. But we're
not
a university. We're a home.
Well, a home to who?
Home for anybody who's interested and wants opportunity. I'm not saying we should have open borders, but I'm simply saying that there's, if you just make us as a university, that overlooks the fact that we do provide opportunity for everybody to sign up and to consider coming here.
You have to have criteria to come in. You have to have some criteria to come in.
Everybody has a different reason, but I'm just saying, if you say that the university is just an employer or just a university,
I mean,
you omit
people. When universities take in people, there's some sort of criteria. So if you're coming on an H-2 work visa, you have to have some skills to meet that. If you're coming on a student visa, you have to have some criteria, meaning you have to get into college to come here. But why we don't secure our immigration system and stop the illegal immigration system the best we can, and then you hear these ridiculous excuses. Well, there's the Canadian border. There's seaports. Okay, well, you start somewhere. But we see the southern border, and we see the crisis. And if you go down and you look at the expense it costs to bring in and to use the techniques now, the narratives that the groups are training people, when you go in, find a border guard, ask for asylum, go through the process. Look at those costs to us as a country. Now, going back to, I think the discussion, was it last Friday or the Friday before, is what's going on in Honduras, Guatemala, El Salvador is utterly ridiculous. Same thing why we left Venezuela go for, 5 years? Why isn't the UN, if the UN wants to be this guardian of the world, why isn't the UN helping in those countries to stabilize those countries so those people will not have to immigrate? And if you're looking for asylum, if it's that bad where you're at, if you get to Mexico, you're already in asylum. You're in a better situation. So this is orchestrated. It goes way deep. It's not
nobody wants to solve it. I mean, Congressman Moreno doesn't want to solve it.
Well, I don't know, but of course he's not our congressman anywhere. But
didn't want to. Neither did Congressman Barletta.
I think Congressman Barletta raised the awareness factor, and it showed. But the part about it is, going back to your question, why don't they want to solve it? Look at what's the advantages. And remember, if these groups, Republican or Democrat, have an issue, they can then leverage that in their next election. So here you have a president in there, and people can disagree with the president, right, wrong, and different. But here's a president saying, hold it, this is a problem. How are we going to solve it? And then we're seeing the Republicans and the Democrats now stuttering, bubbling, stumbling, saying, is the problem with our politics.
Yeah, I need this issue in my next election.
You know what? It's not about Band-Aid. It's about curing. Cure the disease. You don't have to treat the symptoms.
All right. 1-800-795-9565 is our hometown pharmacy's toll-free line. 1-800-795-9565. One of our smart listeners sends us a note and says, good morning. I believe we should raise our wages to make America greater. Employers around here pay about $12 an hour for most professional basic jobs. If the minimum wage was raised to $12 an hour all around, we would have employees making a living wage and wouldn't need welfare to help them, saving taxpayers money in the long run. So, yeah, you wouldn't need as much subsidized housing or as much subsidized health care, let fewer MA cards.
I think I'll pass to Dean Russo, and he can give you the three criteria what happens. You
know, he says a slight raise could be beneficial. It's a huge raise that is a job killer.
But remember,
in his view,
minimum wage is entry level. So when you come into entry, you get skills, you work, you move up the ladder to increase your compensation. I mean, it'd be hard to, what's minimum wage going to be 20 years from now? People are going to want it to be vice president wages. So you come in as a vice president, and that's and a living wage, housing, these are all superficial things that, you can't define.
All right, 1-800-795-9565 is our telephone number. Some people don't like the president. Here's proof. In Lake Geneva, Wisconsin, a Minnesota team won't be at the National Snow Sculpting Championship this week after two of its proposed pieces, including one depicting President Trump, were denied because of the political overtones. The team created a snow sculpture depicting Trump last year at the event in Lake Geneva, Wisconsin, that was responding to some of the president's vulgar comments about African countries. The organizers, in turn, clarified the rules earlier this year with sculptors warning them to stay away from controversy or political designs because the event is family-friendly. So this year they applied. They were going to say something else about President Trump, but no snow sculpting about the president in Lake Geneva, Wisconsin. They don't want that discussion there.
No, it's, you know, like I said, and that does what for who? and you talk about the people who want to preach their tolerance, and then they become the ones who just aren't. And again, look at affordable wages, look at affordable housing, look at some of these things, and then start to define them in the real world, and it gets tough.
All right, we're going to do our Super Bowl confab momentarily. We have a text. One listener says the UN won't do anything about the problems in Venezuela because the UN is full of tin horn dictators, and they don't see a problem there.
Well, I'll say this. The UN might be a world organization that has utterly fell short of its goals and has become almost a, I'm going to say politely, but almost a running joke in a lot of ways, where they can't, they really can't initiate what they were formed to do. It's very unfortunate because it could be a very positive organization, but what we see goes on there just isn't instrumental in solving problems.
All right, and we got an email as well. Hi, I saw on social media from Crime Watch we had one person in Shamokin and one close to Augustaville found unresponsive last night and early this morning. Some were saying there's one found every week. God help these addicts. So, yeah, talking about drug addiction and the family that wrote the book about enabling. The book's all about enabling. It's not about addiction. All right. Mr. Matt Catrillo gets to join us. I hope Rob will crack the mic, too. And we have Mr. Ben across from me. We're going to find out that everybody hates New England in a moment. Hey, the Sunbury Motor Company wants you to visit so that you can check out the Ford, Hyundai, Kia, and Lincoln cars and trucks. You can check out the Sunbury Motor Company and buy those vehicles. They got hundreds of pre-owned vehicles that go through the 1,000-point check and are ready to go and are extremely cleaned out and ready to drive. They happen to be at the Sunbury Motor Company, a premier service provider for all makes of cars and trucks. That means the quick lane plus the huge garage can take care of big trucks. And they also got a master towing service. They got a body shop. They got a car wash, you name it. They got it all going on at the Sunbury Motor Company. And they would just love to super serve you as they have been doing to people, super serving them for more than 100 years. You can check them out at sunburymotors.com.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you, the other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Say that again.
The frozen tundra of the Mercedes Dome, Atlanta, Georgia.
It was frozen there this week to begin the week.
It was outside, but that's...
If the field inside is frozen, there's something wrong.
That's true.
Rob,
yes.
Who is that? John for...
John Facenda.
Facenda, that's right. Boy, the voice for folks who are probably... in our age, Mark, Matt a little younger, Rob our age, that is the voice of NFL football.
Well, growing up in Philadelphia, he was a voice for everything in Philly when I was a kid. So
It's truly that brings on, what's the song, What Do You Do with a Drunken Sailor? All that music put to NFL, that was far ahead of its time, and it's classics to go back and watch it.
Always gives me goosebumps, always.
All right, men. Super Bowl prediction. Rob, who do you think is going to win by what score?
Okay, well, first up, I just want to say the current line is New England is a 2.5-point favorite, which I'm amazed. I thought it would be more than that.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. So if I'm going to go first, I want the Rams to win. I want the Rams to win 50-0.
50-0.
Yeah, that's what I want. But I expect, I'm going to say, Patriots win 27-24 with a last-second field goal.
Oh, wow. Even the how.
Yeah.
Good.
I say the Rams are going to tie it up in the fourth quarter, and then the Patriots will march down the field and kick a field goal to win it.
Right. I say the Rams are going to win 44-30.
Wow, you got a high-scoring one. And, okay.
Well,
I could
the Rams
see that.
Are going to have, like, 40 points by halftime.
So the over the
– the over-under on points right now is 56.5.
Okay, so that's 56.5, but we got the Patriots with a 2.5-point
Yeah, the 2.5-point favorite,
so,
yeah.
I mean, Matt, you're thinking that's
It's a slight low. Patriot line. Yeah, because you take away the neutral – you put in the neutral site aspect into it. It's a slight Patriot line still.
So, you're saying, Matt, you're saying 31-20.
Correct.
Patriots win.
Yes.
Oh, boy. But you don't want the Patriots.
I don't want the – well, I guess I'm not – I won't be as angry as I normally am if the Patriots win just because I'm tired of the Sean McVay infatuations that have been happening the last 2 weeks, thinking he's the best coach in sliced bread, which I think is outrageous considering Doug Peterson beat him last year and beat him twice and has won a Super Bowl. But –
that's another topic.
Yeah, exactly. That is another topic.
Yeah, the man crush has gotten old already.
Exactly. But also, too, there is someone on the Rams from my hometown in Stroudsburg, my hometown area, Stroudsburg High School grad, Sebastian Joseph Day, who is a rookie for the Rams. He hasn't played a whole lot, but he's going to be playing, so I'm rooting for him, too.
All right, fabulous. And, Ben, your winner and prediction of the score?
Well, I look at the Patriots as – and when you have teams going to the playoffs, and we saw it last year with Philadelphia, they were on the rise. The Patriots' last three games have been superb. They probably were overmatched in Kansas City, but you can see – what the Patriots do, and I'm going to make a real slight comparison. In our area, we have a team that plays football for 15 or 16 games. It depends what Southern Columbia's schedule is. But when they start their conditioning, probably now, they look to say, hey, we're going to go to Hershey in December, and we're going to lay this out, and we're going to play the way we have to. We'll play up to our competition. We're going to play younger people at certain times, but we're in it to go to the Super Bowl. That's what the Patriots are. So you see them peaking at the right time. And I think what their defense has done, particularly last week, and what their running game has been able to do for their passing game on offense, well, when they're running the ball, they're controlling it, and then it makes Tom Brady really a magician back there because he can do a lot of things. So I think you're seeing the team peak at the right time, and you're going to see the Patriots, I believe, 38-21. I believe the Rams might be a little bit of deer in the headlights. However, I'll give them one thing. They do have a heck of a defensive coordinator in Phillips. So that's a wild card.
They just had
there.
A lot of success against Tom Brady,
yeah.
too. So
and
that'll
that's,
be
that's a wild card there.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's going to pay off. I think the Rams are going to have the Patriots on their heels the whole game, and then Patriots will do a little bit of catch-up, but by then it'll be out of reach. It's going to be all Rams all the time.
All right.
And
hey, we'll see.
A little bit of
– I'd love to see it.
Now, is Tom Brady the best quarterback that ever lived?
Yes, definitely.
I put him number two behind Montana.
It's hard. It's generations. I mean, you look back what Sid Luckman and Sammy Ball did. You look at what Joe Montana, as Rob talked about, did.
Staubach?
Well, Roger Staubach, Terry Bradshaw. I mean, you have to throw these people.
Top 10.
You have to throw. But, you know, it's hard when you got so many good athletes, quarterbacks per se in a generation. I mean, the greatest receiver in the world, they talk about Jerry Rice, but go back at Don Hutson with the Green Bay Packers. Look at his records and how long they were. So it's hard generational-wise, but it would be, if Tom Brady's not there, is it's one, there must be a 1A.
All right. What are you going to eat during the Super Bowl?
My wife and I are making homemade cheesesteaks. We're going to do some potato skins, some onion rings, and...
Rob doesn't know. I looked at Rob. He shrugs his shoulder.
So, whatever the wife decides to make, we'll have.
Right, that's right.
We got it all ready to go. We got our spread ready.
I got venison chili dogs is what I'll be having.
Boy, that's healthy. I think we're going with tenderloin steak sandwiches,
there
wings, and I think you have to have this nowadays. It's almost, if you don't, people might stop your party. You better have some guacamole dip.
Oh, no, there won't be any guac? In my house.
Okay. Yeah, no guac here either.
No guac? Okay.
I'd have some guac.
They could stop selling guacamole or stop making it. I'd be fine with that.
It's the good fat, right?
Yes, guacamole. Exactly right. Okay. Yes.
Matt, you have a great weekend. Thank you
yes,
very much.
You guys too.
You
Ben,
too,
enjoy
yeah.
it. Thanks for coming in. Super
Go Rams.
Opinion.
Go Rams.
Yeah. Anybody.
Anybody but the Patriots.
Yeah. All right, then thank you, Rob Center. Another fabulous week as our producer. And thank you for listening to our program. We appreciate that. If you want to email in your prediction, you still have time here. Email it to onthemark@wkok.com. We'll see how you did on Monday morning. You're listening to News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury.